Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Juries and Criminal Fines Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On June 21, 2012, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Southern Union Company versus United States. The question in this case was whether the imposition of criminal fines is subject to the Sixth Amendment principle articulated in Apprendi versus New Jersey, which holds that, quote, other than the fact of a prior conviction, any fact that increases the penalty for a crime beyond the prescribed statutory maximum must be submitted to a jury and proved beyond a reasonable doubt, end quote. In an opinion delivered by Justice Sotomayor, the court held by a vote of 6-3 that the rule established in Apprendi does apply to the imposition of criminal fines. The Chief Justice, as well as Justices Scalia, Thomas, Ginsburg, and Kagan, joined the majority opinion. Justice Breyer filed a dissenting opinion, which was joined by Justices Kennedy and Alito. To discuss the case, we have Ryan Scott, who is an associate professor at Indiana University Maurer School of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Scott.
Hi, my name is Ryan Scott. I'm a professor of law at Indiana University in Bloomington, and I am here to talk about Southern Union Company versus United States, a decision by the Supreme Court that was handed down last Thursday, June 21st. The court held by a 6-3 vote that criminal defendants have a right to have a jury rather than a judge find any facts that increase the maximum possible amount of a criminal fine. In doing so, the court extended the rule of a case called Apprendi versus New Jersey, a 2000 decision concerning the role of the jury in finding facts that increase a maximum term of imprisonment. So today I'll briefly describe the facts and legal issues presented in the case. I'll summarize how the court divided over the proper outcome and offer a few thoughts about what the decision tells us about the court's newest members and what questions the court may confront next in this line of cases. So Southern Union Company is a corporation charged with storing liquid mercury without a permit. That's a criminal offense under the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act of 1976. Storing liquid mercury without a permit is a crime for any length of time, but the statute authorizes a fine as punishment that depends on the duration of the defense, so not more than $50,000 for each day of violation. In this case, at trial, a jury found Southern Union guilty by a general verdict, but was not asked to specify how long the offense lasted. And instead, at sentencing, the trial judge found by a preponderance of the evidence that the violation had lasted for more than 2 years and imposed a fine of $6 million and a community service obligation of $12 million, in total $18 million worth of financial penalties, well more than would have been supported just by the jury verdict, which didn't specify any length of time could have been supported by a single day of violation. The company argued that under the Sixth Amendment, which guarantees criminal defendants the right to a jury trial, it was entitled to have a jury make a finding beyond a reasonable doubt about how long the violation lasted. It insisted that for part of the two-year period, it intended to reclaim the mercury, so no permit was necessary under the Act. So there was some dispute over how long the violation might have lasted. And by a 6-3 margin, the Supreme Court last week agreed. And to understand the legal issues, I have to walk through a little bit of history of how the court has reshaped federal sentencing and state sentencing in the last decade or so. I mentioned this case, Apprendi versus New Jersey from 2000. In that case, the court held that any fact other than a prior conviction that increases the maximum potential sentence for a criminal offense must be found by a jury beyond a reasonable doubt. And before this case, it had applied that rule in the context of prison terms. That decision, Apprendi, and the cases that followed it, radically reshaped criminal sentencing in the state and federal systems. Many states had determinate sentencing systems where the maximum prison term could increase depending on facts found at sentencing by the judge. And the federal sentencing guidelines were struck down as unconstitutional and rendered advisory rather than mandatory. As Apprendi just produced a decade of chaos and realignment in the world of criminal sentencing. And then 2 years ago, in a decision called Oregon versus ICE, the Supreme Court declined to extend the logic of Apprendi to a state law that authorized sentences for separate offenses to run consecutively rather than concurrently, only upon the finding of certain facts and allowed judges rather than juries to find those facts. In Ice, by a 5-4 margin, the court upheld that kind of scheme, and it drew upon the history of the jury trial right, especially in the founding era and the early 19th century. The court reasoned that this consecutive versus concurrent sentence determination was one traditionally reserved to the discretion of the judge, and it hinted in dictum that a contrary answer would be problematic because it might require juries to find facts concerning maximum levels of fines and restitution and forfeiture, all issues as to which juries have virtually no say in most systems today. So after a decade of losing these Sixth Amendment sentencing cases, the government finally won one in Oregon versus ICE. It persuaded the court not to extend the logic of Apprendi to this other context of consecutive versus concurrent opinion. And that set up the case, which was hinted at in ICE, about whether fines should be treated the same way. Are they subject to the rule of Apprendi versus New Jersey, or are they a special kind of determination different from the length of a prison term as to which this rule has no application, and so in which judges are free to make the findings about, for example, the length of the duration or the amount of loss in a fraud case that sometimes are key to setting the maximum amount of a fine. The government, as I mentioned in the post-argument podcast, was hoping to notch another victory here. It urged the court that ICE should be considered the high watermark for Apprendi, and the subtext was very clear, that enough disruption of criminal sentencing. There's no need to follow the relentless logic of Apprendi into every other context. We should be done meddling and let existing state and federal procedures suffice for determining things other than prison sentences. And the court did not agree and instead returned to form in Southern Union. In an opinion by Justice Sotomayor on behalf of six justices, it held that the rule of Apprendi does apply with full force in the context of criminal fines. It rejected the suggestion that because they're less serious than terms of imprisonment, fines shouldn't trigger the same Sixth Amendment protections, noting that fines may run into the millions of dollars, as in this case, and can certainly have crippling consequences for individual or corporate defendants. And it also shrugged off the government's warnings about the practical consequences of extending the jury trial right to facts about fines. Most federal circuits had assumed for years that this rule would apply to fines as well and seemed to create any serious problems yet. And the court also noted that practical concerns hadn't swayed the court in Apprendi itself 10 years ago, which is putting it mildly. So most of the discussion in the opinion centers on history, with the majority and the dissent disputing the role of the jury in finding facts that set the maximum amount of a fine during the founding era and in the early 19th century. The majority was persuaded that juries did play an important role in finding those facts because ordinarily, not always, but ordinarily in the nation's early history, those facts were alleged in the indictment, and so they were found by a jury. So although the result in this case was different from ICE, here the court concluded that the jury trial right was applicable. The method of analysis seems very familiar. Close attention to often conflicting and ambiguous evidence of historical practice, that the method of analysis is very familiar. The lineup of the case is interesting, and it's one of the significant things about the case that I mentioned earlier was this was our first chance to see how two new members of the court, Justices Sotomayor and Kagan, would weigh in on how the Sixth Amendment applies and the rule of Apprendi applies in different contexts. And in this case, both of them were in the majority. That was not at all a foregone conclusion. This was an unusually difficult case to predict because the breakdown in these sentencing cases does not fall along traditional ideological lines. This case is a great example. The 6-3 majority consists of Justices Sotomayor, Kagan, and Ginsburg, along with Chief Justice Roberts and Justices Scalia and Thomas, a group that is quite unusual to be in agreement. It's also significant because Justices Sotomayor and Kagan are replacing two justices, Justices Stevens and Souter, who did not see eye to eye at all on these issues. And so it wasn't clear whether their opinions might shake up the majority that had initially backed Apprendi and then extended it to different contexts, often by razor-thin margins. The dissenters in the case, by the way, were not at all surprising. The dissent was written by Justice Breyer, joined by Justices Alito and Kennedy, all three justices who had expressed skepticism about extending the rule of Apprendi in any context and had disagreed with a number of the court's moves in the last decade. So no big surprise there. And Justice Breyer stressed that much of the historical evidence in this case was similar to the evidence concerning the consecutive versus concurrent sentence issue in ICE, that it was at bottom the same kind of decision traditionally reserved to the judge. So more disagreement about history, but a predictable lineup of dissenters on the question of whether to extend the case any further. Is this a bombshell decision that will dramatically affect criminal practice at the federal or state level? Probably not. The number of cases that are affected is fairly small. That's because criminal fines that are pegged with a maximum level to particular facts are relatively rare. They can be very high-stakes cases, and for criminal defendants, whether individuals or corporations who are charged with crimes, it could be significant both in plea bargaining and ultimately in determining the level of a fine. It could be significant that it's a jury rather than a judge that will ultimately be responsible for findings of fact. But this is not an issue that arises as a routine matter in criminal cases. That said, this resolution of the case leaves a few more questions unresolved, and that's probably where the court will have to go next. In particular, the court mentioned in ICE two other kinds of financial penalties that can be imposed at sentencing and that today are largely left at the discretion of judges. That's restitution and forfeiture. And if there are statutes at the state and federal level that peg the maximum level of restitution or forfeiture to particular facts, it's possible that the court could extend the logic of Southern Union and Apprendi to those contexts as well, meaning that a jury would have to make those findings rather than a judge. Those cases will involve slightly different issues about whether restitution and forfeiture are properly characterized as punishments of the defendant. And I'm sure, given the analysis in Southern Union, that there'll be a vigorous historical debate over what role, if any, juries played at the founding era in finding those kinds of facts. But Southern Union tells us more than anything that Apprendi is not dead, that ICE did not set a high water mark for the rule of Apprendi, and that the court is still willing to extend the logic of Apprendi in any context to which it may formally apply. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.